This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to the Brit Rest Roundtable. We haven't recorded for a couple of weeks and loads of shows have happened. With me is Ollie Cort.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about the WXW / Progress Chapter 43 weekend, which seems like an eternity ago. It was about 2 weeks, but it seems like longer. And also the weekend after was ICW Square Go, so we're going to talk about that as well. We're going to try and cover ICW better this year than we did last year when we kind of forgot about it. It's easily done. I mean, but I think there's more positives coming out of this show than there was out of Fear and Loathing. So, yeah. But we're going to start with WXW because it was their first show in the UK and it was quite exciting. So we're going to go through that. I was there. Ollie, you weren't?
I was not. Unless you this weekend.
Unless you were hiding somewhere and I couldn't see you.
I don't hide at wrestling shows.
No.
I'm a little bit short, so maybe maybe people could just overlook me.
Well, we did,
but yeah, I was not here on this occasion.
We did have to do height ordering again in the crowd.
Because
I was standing off to the side and Dan the Dazzler was stood right behind me and he's like, big lads at the back.
Yeah, me and Dan the Dazzler are about the same height, so we get a priority viewing.
Yeah, I had to move him forwards. How did it come across on VOD? So I watched it also on VOD, but like I was still remembering what it was like being there.
Yeah, came across really well. Alan Coonahan, obviously, we know and love Alan Forel, and Jeremy Graves, I believe,
it was.
Doing the commentary. Yeah, they're a really good team. I enjoy them every time. The hard camera was a bit wobbly throughout the night. It kept slightly like leaning to the side and then someone having to rewrite every time. But other than that, yeah, WXW's production quality is probably the best in Europe. So yeah, no real complaints there.
It was a great venue as well. It's the Dome in Tufnell Park. It was an all-standing show, so everyone was just kind of I wouldn't say cramped in together, but there was still room to move around. But I can see why the German shows have such a high reputation for live experience, because that's certainly how it came across in London, and there were a lot of Germans there, so it kind of brought a different atmosphere than you'd get, say, at Progress or Fight Club.
It did feel like a WXW crowd, definitely.
Yeah, there were a lot of the lads who normally go to Progress were there as well, so it was kind of a mixture, but it kind of maintained that German atmosphere for the most part. Should we have a look through the card?
Let's have a look through the card.
Tag
Team Championship. To start us off, and the London Riots, the best opening act tag team in the world, going up against A4, Absolute Andy, and Marisol Annie. Yeah, like you say, a good way to start off a German / London infusion show, basically. Like, obviously, the WXW Tag Team Champions versus the team that defines London wrestling.
It was supposed
really
to be
good start, as always, to a show.
Was supposed to be Mustache Mountain, of course. They got hooked,
yeah,
because of Flow Slam.
So. Yeah, WXW have just gone hardline on that and said, yeah, we're just not going to book them anymore. Yeah, obviously, since they're not in bed with WWE, they can't really rely on them at all. So,
but this is a good replacement team to bring in, having the Riots in
definitely.
There. Very good opening match. Crowd was loud. Had a lot of fun. I don't think they've wrestled each other before, but so there were some teething problems in there. But the Riots just have this this knack of having like a really good, fun, strong match with a lot of bashing people in the face and a bit of comedy thrown in every now and again. It's good stuff.
It can work with basically any team, and they're doing really strong work at the moment. They're sort of doing the best work of their career. So yeah. No complaints about this match. Definitely a good way to get into the show.
Yeah, and I'm aware that we've got a lot to talk about on the on here, so we're going to try and skip over the lower card stuff where possible. Second match on the show was Travis Banks against Jody Fleisch. This is another match that suffered from WWE talent removal because Pete Dunne was supposed to be in this match, and he got hooked. But Travis, great replacement. He has he's another guy that has a knack of having these great undercard matches, but he does them in such a way that they don't overshadow main events.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
And he let Jody
Fleisch again as well.
Yeah, he let Jody do like all his stuff, and it still felt like a coherent storyline. I thought this was a really good match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I had a feeling that these two would have very good chemistry together, and they definitely did. Obviously, Travis Banks, student of the game, like he can wrestle any style, and like he definitely met up with Jody's style very well here.
Yeah, Jody Fleisch, I think, has aged extremely well. I don't know if it's because he reduced his schedule, but the three guys from the last little comeback era, if you will, of Brit Rest, when it was him, Johnny Storm, and Doug Williams. I'm surprised that it's Fleisch who's aged the best of those three, because you'd think with his style that he wouldn't have done, but he really has.
He's the guy who does the ridiculous shit, and he ends up best off in his 40s. Who would have thought?
Yeah, it's a ridiculous state of affairs. But he's still doing the stuff that he was doing at his peak, like moonsaults to the floor, the Phoenix 720s. Like he's doing all that stuff, and it still looks as crisp as it ever has.
I guess one wrinkle to this match we should say is that this wasn't a 16-carat qualifier as it was going to be with Dunn involved. Presumably Dunn would have won that match and moved into 16-carat. So yeah, that whole WWE thing has really changed up WXW's booking. And like I say, no more Mustache Mountain or Pete Dunne in WXW anymore.
Yeah.
They weren't big parts of the show, but they were fairly significant on the undercards. So yeah, definitely changing things up on the fly for WXW here.
I think Tyler Bates a big loss for them, because he was being utilized quite well on the undercards. He was having some very good matches for them. So, I mean, Pete and Trent had only really kind of started to be used by them, but I think Tyler's a big loss, as he would be to any veteran.
You can see why they've gone hardline. Obviously, ICW in progress, who we're going to talk about in a bit, have more free reign on those guys for reasons that you probably know already. WXW going it alone.
Yeah, once you've got in bed with Flow Slam, it's a case of, I think WWE are going to shut the door on you for doing that. We saw that with IPW UK as well, and it's affected the relationship with OTT to a degree because they have the one show on there. WXW obviously want to be independent or relatively independent, and fair play to them. They're still putting on good shows. Third match on this card, big Robert Dreisker against Bad Bones John Klinger. Dreisker's been out of action for a while. I think this is his first singles match in almost a year. Is it almost a year? It might even be over a year.
First televised one, definitely. It didn't seem too ring rusty, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure about. You can never really tell until someone gets like into a seriously long-winded match whether there are actually any issues there. And this wasn't a match where there were going to be any timing problems because they were just walloping each other with elbows and stuff. So, yeah, it worked for what it was. Klinger's good. Kind of surprised that Dreiska went over, but I guess they got to build him back up again.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't think he's going to be taking any losses before the 16 carat. And in the 16 carat, I think he's probably one of the favourites to go far and maybe even win the whole thing. Because they were planning something big with him last year, and then obviously the injury stopped that. So I think they're going to go back to the well again and say, yeah, we're going to really push Dreiska strong. He's up against Ilya Dragunov in that first round of the 16 carat, so that will further this story of Cerberus versus like the impromptu team of Bad Bones and the newly faced Ilya Dragunov. So I think that story's been interesting so far. It'd be interesting to see where it goes.
I do think Dragunov has more upscale about him. I think he's got a better shot at cracking into the main events than Dreiska. I think Dreiska works well for what he is.
Yeah.
I don't know. When you look at the match after this one, which was Volta against Jurn Simmons, I thought both those guys did better work, and they're kind of fighting for the same spot almost. They're like the defining big lad of WXW. And for me, Volta and Simmons are just way ahead of Dreiska at the moment.
Yeah, I probably agree. Obviously, Volta is incredible, and we're going to talk more about him during the Progress show. And he kind of fell off our radar in the second half of last year. But yeah, he's come back very strong early in this year. And this was another strong performance from him. Not a great match by any means. I think Simmons is still getting there in the ring. He's certainly improved from just standing there doing nothing during his title reign. And babyface Simmons definitely has a lot of potential. He was fantastic in this weekend, but mainly for out-of-ring reasons rather than in-ring reasons.
I got really into this one, I've got to say. The crowd just fell in love with Jurn. As soon as he walked out there, it was just like the reaction to him was incredible. And he has the kind of charisma that you can't teach it. It's no. There's so many things that you can teach people in wrestling, but you can't teach the kind of presence that certain people have. And I keep saying it again, about guys like Katsuyori Shibata. It's like when they walk into the ring, you know you're watching somebody who's a star. Yeah. And Simmons has most of that. He's most of the way there. For a guy of his experience, that's incredible work.
He definitely learned a lot during his title reign. I think he went into that not the finished article at all, and he came out of it having learned a hell of a lot more, and now he's ready to use what he learned. So I think that title reign, even though it wasn't a good title reign, definitely helped his development. Like,
well, his in-ring improved immensely during that title reign. It's like when it started off, he was having these stall-tastic matches with the one with Jeff Jarrett was painful.
Let's never talk about that ever again. But I think also he's like got more confident, and like he's always been very charismatic, but I feel like he's got more confident in projecting that charisma. And now obviously he's just crazy and doing his 5-minute air guitars.
If there's one thing he's not lacking, it's confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy.
It's incredible. We've done like a complete 180 on him in the last 9 months. Like, we were absolutely shitting on him last summer.
We did the Euro draft and like nobody even thought about
it. No one went for Euro.
No one.
I think the Euro redraft that we will definitely do this year because I want to do it again. Jurn Simmons is going to be in the top half almost certainly because, yeah, like you say, he projects himself like a star and you want that.
Yeah, he's going to do good things in the business. No doubt about that. I think Volta at the moment is probably the guy for in-ring for WXW.
Yeah.
Like his performances, especially over the last couple of months, have been special. And it's very difficult to find someone who works that way. for WXW to have one there already, plus another one in Dieter Jr. that just exudes like smarm, that they're already in a very good place. And that's having lost all the talent that WWE have insisted don't work for them. So I think they are in a surprisingly good place, and they put on a really good show here.
I completely agree. Like, WXW is definitely looking strong heading into 2017. Next match.
Chris Brooks, the cock, against Damak. Brooks is starting to get booked all over the place, and it's about damn time.
He's really good, and he's another guy who like loves wrestling, and all it's like he's a fan, and unashamedly so. Like he's not 1970s the business. You gotta love the business. No, he loves wrestling, and that can only lead to good things, great matches, and a big personality. And yeah, really good to see him regularly in WXW now, going forward, and regularly in Rev Pro and all his usual spots as well. It's going to be exciting to see Chris Brooks a lot more.
Well, yeah, one criticism of Brooks is that he's so big and he doesn't use that size, I don't feel like, effectively.
Yeah.
In this match, Damak went to do one of his dives to the floor and Brooks bicycle kicked him from the floor while he was coming through the ropes and kicked him back into the ring. That's using your size effectively. That's the kind of thing I want to see from Brooks.
Definitely. Well, he kind of wrestles more like a cruiserweight, but he is deceptively big. So
yeah, he's like maybe 6'4"? He's small. Maybe even more.
He is really tall.
Yeah, no, he was very effective here. Like I say, another good match. I don't think there was a bad match on this show. It was just top to bottom solid. Damak is somebody who I'm not really that into, but when he gets into his groove, he's really good. And I think it depends on whether he's wrestled with the person before, how familiar he is with people. He seems to get better based on interactions with people. So I think he's worked with Brooks already, and that showed here.
I've always liked Damak, but I feel like his character just hasn't changed in the past 2 years. Like, you've got Volta, Dieter Jr., Simmons, Dragunov, all these interesting guys.
Yeah, they've all evolved, haven't they?
And they've all evolved, and his Damak still doing the exact same shtick he was doing when I first started watching WXW. He's just uninteresting right now. He's not in the 16 carat, no real momentum or story going on.
Well, he's supposedly one of the guys that's opposing, like the management, Christian Mikhail Yakov.
He's
one of the guys who's supposed to be standing up to him. So it's kind of a surprise to me that he's not in 16 carat, because that would have made sense from a storyline perspective, especially if he'd worked with Dieter at some. I assume he's going to have a match with Dieter again at some point.
Yeah. I don't know, I want something new out of him. I don't want him to turn heel necessarily, just get an edge to him, because he's a bit too smiley, baby-facey right now.
Yeah.
A bit Apollo Crews-y.
I've never been keen on the whole Michael Jackson thing, but...
No. Yeah. He was also in the CWC and nothing really came of that. Like, he didn't get any marketable
from
that.
He was okay. Of the guys they used, he was one of the ones that you looked at and thought, well, he didn't embarrass himself or anything, but I probably wouldn't have him back. And they haven't. The next match was the women's tag match, which was Alpha Female and Ginny against Melanie Gray and Toni Storm. They've got a really good storyline going on with Alpha Female and Melanie Gray. Where they've had like all manner of shenanigans with the Melanie's wedding being broken up, and assaults upon their person by the two heels, Alpha Female and Marius van Beethoven. And I kind of thought that they'd run out of stuff to do, But then they had that cage match where Alpha Female just destroyed Melanie Gray in that match. Just killed her, and just she was bleeding all over the place, and it just kind of took it to another level, and now it's still going. And they did some good stuff, some good interaction in this as well. I had a quick chat with Alpha Female after the show. I just felt I had to. and she's devastatingly nice, which is almost upsetting because she's so vital. Like, I reminded her of the match with Melanie Gray and how she punched her in the head until she was bleeding, and she started giggling. Yeah, giggling. Just keep that in mind.
This is a pretty heated feud, and you know there's going to be a big blow off at 16 Carat. That's definitely something extra to that weekend to get excited about. And yeah, it's sort of come out of the blue, but it has been really good. It sort of emerged from a comedy feud and turned into a bloodbath. So yeah, that's pretty exciting. This is kind of just a holdover match to get to 16 Carat, but yeah, that blow off is going to be something.
Yeah, I do like the way they incorporated their storylines into this show. It wasn't just like, oh, let's go to London and put on like a...
They made this a big deal. You know, there's two title matches, number one contendership. This is like their proper build-up to 16 Carat. This isn't just some tour stop.
Yeah, no, that impressed me as well. I thought this was a really good match, the women's tag. Obviously, Ginny's improved leaps and bounds over the last year. Tony Storm's always been really good, but she's getting even better. And there might have been some slight miscommunication perhaps involving some of the spots, but some of the brutality, I don't know if you saw Tony was just throwing Alpha Female around, and the lung blow that she did on Ginny was just it's violent.
I remember it, yeah.
I'm trying to remember what the finish was, wasn't it? It was Melanie Gray, but she beats Ginny, not Alpha Female, which I thought was very important. But
beat Alpha Female at 16 Carat.
Yeah, and that'll be a huge blow off for that storyline. Possibly as a tag match, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Main event on this show was the WXW Unified Championship match, pitting champion Axel Dieter Jr. against former champion Marty Skrull, who he beat after he wasn't cashing in, was it? He just kind of wrestled him after the main event of the last show.
Yeah, because Christian Michael Jacoby's a bastard.
Yeah, well, it's heel authority figures, that's what you get.
Yeah.
this was an extremely good match. Like, I know I've been saying that all show long, but this was better than anything else on the show. The character work from Axel is it's astonishing to think that just a couple of months ago he was a babyface.
Yeah, I mean, we've been crying out for him to turn heel. Everyone wanted him heel at last year's 16 Carat, which was the basis for this match. Obviously, a heel Marty Skrull versus babyface Dieter Jr. then. Oh. And it's being used in the opposite direction here. I really like that.
Yeah, Marty got huge crowd support here. I like that he doesn't necessarily change an awful lot, because he doesn't wrestle face or heel. And he said this on the I went to the Working and Rest Hold podcast in the afternoon, when Skrull was the main event speaker. Yeah. And he said that he's never seen himself since becoming the villain, he's never seen himself as a heel or a face. He's just the villain. And whether you like
that, comes across as.
Yeah, whether you like that or not is down to you. and he doesn't expect to be cheered or booed. He's just going to do what he wants and put together a body of work. And I think the reason why the crowd has changed from booing him to cheering him is because all of his cheating has become more familiar. And I think you get that.
You signature spots like Ric Flair.
Yeah. And the only difference really that he's done in terms of like his moveset is when he's calling for the chicken wing, it's not just the one little spin anymore. He does like this massive build-up where he's like running around the ring and trying to get
the crowd. That's over as hell.
Yeah. So that's the only major difference there.
He's doing great work as a tweener right now, and I think he's sort of working a little bit by saying, oh, I'm not face or heel, because he was very definitively trying to be a heel last year in progress, changing his song and all that, and now he's trying to be more of a face pretty much everywhere. Like, you can sort of see it, but yeah, I know what he means by that. Like, he's not overtly changing much, but it's just like slight tweaks to the system rather than like evolutions rather than revolutions, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that, this is an example, Lex Luger in WCW, he used to flip flop between face and heel all the time. And when he did, he completely changed the way he worked. Like, when he worked as a face, he was all doing like no selling, hulking up kind of stuff. And when he was a heel, he was like a cowardly heel. It's just, you can't do that. You have to maintain the same personality, but just change it so that you're something that you do is bad as opposed to good. And it's just, it wasn't the same thing. It was just, he would be a completely different wrestler just because he was a heel or a face. Whereas Marty is doing the same thing. He's doing the same act, but it's just received differently because of the way that he's doing it, which, that's the way it should be.
If Marty can learn one thing from Lex Luger, it's how to sell. Not that Marty's girl can't sell, it's just that Lex Luger is the greatest of all time at selling with his comedy. Sorry for the complete tangent, but anytime Lex Luger WCW is mentioned, I have to point that out.
I think Lex Luger's run in WCW is just one of the most all over the place runs in in wrestling history. It's all over the place. You could never get a handle on what he was doing there. It's just anyway. That's a complete tangent. Let's forget about that. So yeah, back to the match. Really good match. Extremely heated. Crowd are quite drunk by this point. Seemed to get a lot louder. Dieter getting a hell of a lot of heat. The look on his face. Have you seen that, the way he sneers at people? The way he looks down on people. It's just incredible.
He does have that whole 1940s German going on.
I know. I'll give you an example of what it was like. Because he got, I wouldn't say a rest hold, but he got a hold on Marty Scurll. And while he's got it on, he just stares at people in the crowd. Just stares right at him. And
it's pretty tremendous.
He stared right at me when he got this arm bar on or something. And he's looking right at me. And I'm like, please look away. Please look away. And he just stared at me for about 15 seconds.
Ringkampf have got it down.
Good Lord, it was uncomfortable. It might have been because I called him a nonce, but...
Yeah, that probably didn't help.
He probably doesn't know what it means. So overall, I thought this was an excellent show. From WXW, I think it's one of the most enjoyable shows I've sat through of theirs from start to finish. I thought not an awful lot of down points at all. And when I watched it back on the VOD, I thought the quality of the work was better because I was getting the chance to kind of analyze it from different angles. And I thought it was excellent throughout.
This was a really strong show and great build for the 16 carat, I think. My hype levels for 16 carat are definitely quite high right now. It's only next month, I think.
It's in March at some point.
Yeah, around about this time next March. And the lineup looks really good, and this show gives me confidence for the matches, the non-tournament matches surrounding it, like the title match, which will be Dieter Jr. versus Ian Simmons, which... with their current alignments, should be great, and like lots of backstory for both guys to play off of. That's going to be a really fun match.
That's going on night two, I believe.
Yeah, main event of night two is always the big title match.
Do we have a lineup of who's in 16 carat?
We do indeed. And we have the matchups now. I think they were announced last week. And they are as follows. Ilya Dragunov versus Robert Dreisker, as we mentioned earlier.
Makes sense.
Continuing that Cerberus feud. ACH versus Mike Bailey. Should be lots of flippy doos and crazy action. JT Dunn, newly added to replace Tyler Bate, versus Marius Alani in the carrot for the first time. He'd be Absolute Andy, his tag team partner, to get in there.
Yeah, Marius Koji is going to have a Kanemoto. Good show, I'm sure.
Definitely. Koji Kanemoto versus Timothy Thatcher. That'll be an interesting match. I think that could actually be quite good. I think Kanemoto's a much better opponent for Thatcher than Sasa Keel was last year.
Yeah, Thatcher, when he's got the right opponent, is genuinely entertaining, I think.
But, yeah, as long as they're not wrestling a Thatcher match, it's okay.
there's going to be a lot of very dickish, like refusing to sell going on, and I would enjoy this, I think.
I want some grumpiness.
Oh, there's going to be grumpiness. I guarantee it with Koji.
We have Cody R versus the winner of the Road to 16 Carat League. Who I'm not entirely sure who that's going to be or like any strong predictions for that. I don't think Cody's going to lose this one though.
No.
Judging by his record.
Cody's as long as he doesn't at some point, because he can't win the whole thing. That's just unacceptable.
He'll get counted out.
Oh, I hope not.
Cody R doesn't take pinfalls. We've got a pretty big match here. David Starr versus Volta. And I could definitely see Starr beating Volta here and just cementing himself as the Shotgun Champion a bit more.
It's going to be a good match either way, I think. But Volta at the moment, he's kind of... I know I was saying about Riddle has kind of stepped into hero spot on the indies, but I feel like in WXW, Volta has stepped into hero spot.
Mm.
Like, he's making that spot his own, so... yeah, should be interesting to see how that plays out.
Probably the biggest upside of any match on the first round card is Donovan Dijak versus Matt Riddle. This could be crazy.
Yeah, I would guess Riddle goes through. But Dijak's, well, he's left Ring of Honor, hasn't he? So who knows what he's going to be doing.
And then the weirdest match to round us off, Bad Bones versus Paul London. Don't really know what to expect from that, but
I really don't know. But I would assume Klinger wins there. I'd be surprised if London went like deep into the tournament.
I think Bad Bones is on a collision course with Dreisker.
See, you get those first round losers. They always have like a flippy do tag match.
Yeah,
somewhere else, and Paul London is ideal for that.
So. Yeah, whoever I could probably loses... see London. JT Dunn and whoever loses ACH Bailey.
Definitely. Should be fun. Should be a fun week.
Yeah. Weekend. Love the flippy do tag match.
Really fired up for WXW this year. They're on a bit of a run at the moment. It's been good storyline. I was talking to somebody earlier today and I said that I felt that Progress were the only company in the UK that were doing run-on storylines, whereas everyone else was kind of just doing big matches and a little bit of storyline in the background. But WXW is another company that does good run-on storylines.
Yeah, obviously they have the Shotgun Show, which is basically what Progress are now doing with Freedom's Road, with all those like backstage segments where they have the English subtitles, but it's for a German audience, obviously, and you get most out of it if you can speak German. I've watched a little bit of that, but never really gotten into it. But yeah, some of the backstage segments are pretty good, and like they're kind of WWE style.
Yeah,
and these guys are all right at it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where Progress go with Freedom's Road as well, because I think that started off a lot better than people are giving it credit for.
Yeah, I watched the second episode or bits of it anyway today. Not a huge fan of it. It sort of feels like a BBC One drama at 7 p.m. or something. Waterloo Road or something.
Well, they're trying to find their feet with it, but
yeah, I'll give it time, definitely.
Well, that seems like a good enough way to kind of seg into Progress, since we're talking about them.
Definitely.
And they had Chapter 43 the same weekend that WXW were down in London, which made for around a quarter of the crowd at Tropic Thunder Bastard were hungover. Quite badly, I might add. So I thought we'd have a bit of a subdued atmosphere for Chapter 43, but I was wrong. It was a great atmosphere, again. How did you feel it came across on VOD? This is another one that I was at, but yeah.
Well, for the first two matches, I would say not a lot of noise, especially for the women's match. Then once Yearn started gyrating, I think the show started picking up. And then Volta killed it. And everyone killed it in that South Pacific Power Trip versus Ring Camp, but especially Volta. And that from there on, everyone was going crazy for everything.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt live as well. It felt really subdued to begin with. And there had been a lot of lager involved. There was a fair chunk of the crowd at WXW went to what was it called, Camden Assembly. So that they were out until like 2. Everyone that came up to me was hungover. I had my usual spot by the bar where we usually stand, and like people kept coming up to me one after another when they went to the bar, and it was a cavalcade of hangovers.
I'd be asking, it was the most hungover.
Oh, most hungover. I think it would have been Keir if Keir wasn't drunk. I asked him how he was and he said, fucked. if you take Keir out of the running, I would say Henry Kerr. He looked awful. But then everyone had the flu as well, or colds or whatever. Because like, yeah, there was something went round that weekend. Yeah.
I mean, it is freezing right now in Britain. So, like, proper see your breath stuff. So, I can understand that.
Everyone got ill that weekend. And the same thing happened in America when everyone went to the Rumble weekend. Everyone got sick there as well. So, I don't know what the deal
is. It's all of these shaking hands and
pressing
kissing
the flesh.
Babies.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of kissing goes on. It's very weird.
Especially in South Pacific Power Trip matches.
Staring at the camera in the process. Right, let's get back onto the show. How did this start? Oh, yeah, they had something that was a little bit like Freedom's Road, because they started off backstage and they had Sebastian putting William Eva on the ring crew. And I know you're not down on the Sebastian story, but the story over the course of this night for Chapter 43, I thought was a really good sort of self-contained part of it.
Yeah, I enjoyed Eva burning a fucking laser eye beam into the back of Sebastian's head when he made him wear the shirt. Sebastian does nothing for me, but I did enjoy Eva ripping off the shirt and then Sebastian running out immediately afterwards and egging it up. That was good impetus for Eva to finally hit him, but it's just, you know, the story's a nothing story and it's not going to lead to anything good in ring. No. So
but I would say this has been the best part of it. Like during the course of this chapter, I thought they did their best work.
That minute was very well booked when Sebastian came out after Eva came out and ripped the ring crew shirt off, then entered and got destroyed and then got hit by Eva. That minute was very good, and I understand why the crowd reacted to that, because it was very well presented, but it was a bit like fast food wrestling, you know? Like, they used all the tricks to get that reaction in that moment, but people still don't really care, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I thought this was the best that they'd done with it, even though we've had issues with it. I like the, when Sebastian at the start of the show, where he's putting Eva on the ring crew, he blamed shit online reviews for his bad behavior. And I know he's posted like a quote out of one of mine on his feed.
Yeah.
So yeah. Fuck off.
Good old thin skin. We podcasters eat that for breakfast.
Yeah, so that was the start of the show. But then they went into the opening match, which was London Riots again against the Kings of the North. Obviously, Riots we've spoken about already. How did you find the Kings of the North?
I think they fit the London Riot style very well. You know, two big lad teams knocking bells out of each other was a good start. Not huge fans of them, though. And I don't know if they really got over with me in this short stint.
Yeah, I kind of got the feeling from watching live that obviously the glove was an easy target, so they got a fair degree of crowd response from that. The actual match I thought was okay, but if you look at Kings of the North, they just haven't been outside of Ireland at all. This is pretty much the first booking they've had where that hasn't been for OTT or the other Irish promotion, name of which I can't remember. That's in
CCW,
might be. I can't remember.
Cork one.
I think there's one in Northern Ireland. It's not important anyway. They're basically, they've only been booked locally in Ireland. And OTT had been the peak of what they've done up to this point. So it did feel like they were slightly out of their depth, but I thought they did okay. Obviously, Riots.
I mean, I still really enjoyed the match, but I don't know how much of it was on Kings of the North and more on just the Riots being the Riots and being the best opening tag match team in the world.
Yeah, so it was what it was. I'd like to see them get another chance against somebody else. I don't know if they're kind of sneakily building up a tag team division because we keep having teams come in and do like one or two shots and then they're not used. So like New Nation, for example, or the Hunter Brothers. And it's very...
I was going to say after the SPPT, South Pacific Power Trip, South Pacific Power Trip versus Ring Camp tag match, but Progress, all their big matches, all their best matches over the last 6 months or so have been tag team matches. Like, I could probably give you four or five tag team matches that were really good to great, and maybe only one or two singles matches of that level from Progress. So I think tag team matches are definitely what they're doing really well at right now. They've built, as you say, they've sneakily built up a really good division. It's just a shame that the champions haven't defended their belts
for ages. It's a bit of an issue, isn't it? But then it's... The thing is, the storyline is so big that it's like you don't really want them to rush to the end of it. It's something that needs to be built up to. But when the belts do change hands, whoever wins them is, they have plenty of other options lined up to face them.
How long do you think the Power Trip have been number one contenders to the tag titles for?
It feels like 6 months. Is it that long?
It has been 4 months.
Four months
and six shows.
I can't see them.
Six shows have gone by.
I can't see them doing that match, though. I can't see them doing...
That's a problem. They can't... Well, here they did heal. We may as well talk... Are we going to talk about SBPT versus Ring Camp
now? Yeah, let's go into that one.
On the topic. Yeah, since it was the best match on the show. They can't really do heel versus heel in that scenario. Without kind of ruining the British Strong Style story by making them faces for a night. And yeah, it's really weird that they made them number one contenders and haven't had them lose that number one contendership and yet still aren't giving them the match.
They've won pretty much every match as well. They've had like
I think they haven't lost
matches and won them all.
Yeah.
So they're keeping them strong, but they clearly don't want to do the match against British Strong Style.
What's going on there? This is a great division that they built in this tag division, and we've got so many teams. Even the jobber teams are great, like the Kings of the North, like the New Nation, like the Shirtlifters. Like they could be very strong parts of this division that they're building. It's just they can't pull the trigger on any title switch or make the title meaningful. They've got all these great tag matches going on, but none of them are for a title match.
Well, we've got Super Strong Style 16 coming up. Can you see the tag belts switching at that show?
Well, the night one main event seems to be the London Riot's forte. They've gone 2 for 2 on the night one main event tags. I could see them beating British Strong Style there and ending that story there.
I can see Pete Dunne holding onto the title for a lot longer, but I just think you kind of need to give him a bit of a payoff on that storyline.
Yeah. I just don't understand why the power trip have been number one contenders for so long without something happening. Like, again, waiting for the other shoe to drop here.
Unless they're planning on having two matches, Strong Style Weekend, having one, so the Riots win on night one and then lose on night two to South Pacific Power Trip, which...
But that is 3 months away, so they'll have been number one contenders for 7 months by that point.
It's an impressive run. they were fantastic against Ringkampf, though. Everyone in that match was so good.
It was a tremendous match.
Dahlia Black as well. Like, everyone just delivered superb character work. The technical stuff was great. Volta murdering people. He killed all three of them. So good.
Yeah, he big booted Dahlia off the...
Oh, the reaction that got. Oh, Jesus Christ.
And yeah, like TK just getting walloped by Volta. Banks going hold for hold with Dita Jr. And yeah, the whole match was built around Volta and just trying to get him off his feet, trying to get him to show any vulnerability whatsoever. Like, he was booked like a monster here, and in the end,
Power Trip had to hit him with a chair.
They had to cheat to win. Yeah,
yeah, such a great match. I went 4.5 on that, and I get the feeling.
Yeah, I only went 4, but. Probably could have gone higher.
I thought it was better live.
I got the fear.
the great thing about watching it live is I was opposite Jim Smallman. Every time like a big spot landed, I looked across at Jim, and I can't do what he did, but it was a collection of horrified looks, hands up to the face, arms up in the air. It was almost as entertaining to watch him as it was to watch the match. So every time Volta killed somebody, I just looked straight across the gym and it was just like, oh! So, it's great to see somebody that involved in the promotion just marking out, like, just having a great time at the wrestling.
And this is all such a great match coming from a big risk to go heel versus heel. Like, this is only Ringkampf's second match in progress, and they already have to turn pseudo babyface. It was a risk going in, but it really paid off in the execution.
Oh, it really did. It was an excellent match. We kind of skipped over a couple of matches to get to that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were both wanting to talk about it.
To be honest, the two matches we skipped over weren't much of anything, though. You had the Natural Progression 4, Laura DiMatteo against Chikara. Chikara, obviously, very inexperienced. Her personality's a little quirky. Some of the selling she did was really weird, but like it kind of worked.
I thought it worked, but not for her character. Like, I feel like she's completely miscast. I get it, she's sort of like tall and imposing, but she should be like quirky, she should be babyface, she should be like happy-go-lucky, etc. Because her selling, her facial expressions, absolutely mental. It's like she lives on another planet. And that could be really endearing, but not for the current character that she's in.
Yeah, I see her as a face long term, to be honest. That's where she's going to be better. Laura, I think they kind of missed a trick by not having her on a show after Brixton, because she really hasn't been on anything for progress in, what, 6 months?
This was a disappointing reintroduction for her. Like, she had the cornrows, and that's supposed to be, oh, wow, such a badass UFC fighter. But if you're going to do that, you got to go the whole hog. You got to get the gloves on, you got to get the mouth guard in. Like, you gotta look the part, and instead it just looked like her, but with cornrows, and yeah.
Yeah, her style wasn't drastically different, like, but there were little bits in there.
Malibu Stacy had a new hat.
No, there was stuff in her act where she kind of changed it up a bit. She's still very young. She's still very inexperienced, which
yeah,
I kind of forget because she's been around in progress for like a year and a half.
I just worry they're going to put her in the final here and go against Ginny. And they're not ready for that yet.
No, I don't think so. I can see her having a very good semi-final and getting beaten by someone, but I could do with that not making the final at this point.
Well, let's talk MPS briefly. Obviously, there's going to be six semi-finalists. Is it going to be the semi-final or is it going to be a quarter-final? And then I think it's going to be the semi-final with six women in it. Is it going to be two triple threats or three singles and then a triple threat final? I don't know.
It's one
they haven't really said anything. I would like them to at least plan this stuff out in advance.
I assume they have, but they just haven't told us.
Yeah, that's annoying. The last first round match is going to be Martina versus Dahlia Black. That should be an odd but fun match.
Well, Dahlia is very good character-wise, so I can see that playing into her character.
So we're looking at a semi-final of Nixon Newell, Toni Storm, Alex Windsor, Laura DiMatteo, Dahlia Black, and Ginny. And from that, Tony and Nixon are obviously the best wrestlers there, but they're also the least available. So I would probably say it's going to be Ginny versus Laura in the final, just because they know they can get them and they won't be in WWE already.
Well, Tony's probably not going to go into WWE at this point, but Nixon is.
Not in Japan either, yeah.
Nixon will be gone in April, is my understanding. So the finals are likely to be after that. Final could probably be a strong start weekend. So that's Nixon out of the running. I can see the final being Ginny and Toni Storm. I could see that.
It depends if Toni is available or not.
Anyone other than Ginny winning?
Slim. Slim to none.
I think we kind of mentally booked it as Ginny already. I can't see anyone else winning, to be honest. So the money match seems to be, to me, that Ginny wins so that somebody can beat her down the line, and that would be the big first title change. Yeah, so that's that booked and sorted. Let's move on. The other match we skipped over there, Roy Johnston and Jurn Simmons. This was all about Jurn Simmons' entrance. I'm so glad we got to see this.
it was incredible.
Seeing it live, I completely understood. So I talked to Strigger about this in the Dundee Arms before High Stakes. And he's saying, you have to see the full entrance. Jurn's full entrance is incredible. And he was saying something about how as a babyface, he'd stormed to the ring and hadn't done any of the entrance, and it just popped the crowd huge. And I didn't really understand that until seeing it live, what he actually does, the full, like, 10-minute entrance. so seeing that on VOD as well, that gives people an idea of that's what it's like. That's the Ewan Simmons.
Kind of makes me want to go to WXW.
Yeah.
And see it for myself. I think Jurn will be back though in progress. Like, they were sort of angling, is he going to get an Atlas shot now?
Yeah, and
that would be a crazy match.
Watching, OTT as well, so it's the world is opening up to Jurn Simmons.
Riddle versus Jurn, charisma explosion.
Yeah. So there wasn't really an awful lot for Roy in this match. It was quick, really. That was it. Game over.
Yeah. Move on.
Then, of course, we have the tag match that we've already talked about. Fucking great match. Really enjoyed it. That really woke the crowd up, set everything up in the second half.
It woke me up on the show as well. Like, I went straight from that into the Thunderbolts and was like, yeah, here we go. I'm hyped for the Thunderbolts, even though I knew what was going to happen already. Everything still got me in it, and the character work and like the way the characters interacted with each other was almost great, like almost perfect. I have a few issues, though, and we'll talk about that as we run down the match.
So I'm trying to think how to run through this.
This is a lot happened in this match. So,
we kind of started off with, we had Mark Andrews and Marty Skill to start with, and that was all babyface stuff. Skill very face. Even the backing away thing that he did. Everything was fishing for crowd reactions. Number three in the match was Trent Seven. After that, it was Jack Sexsmith. Jack got the biggest reaction of anybody.
I'm not surprised. Like, they're giving him the big, well, not a big push, but a push, and the character is certainly working. My only problem is, part of the problem is he's still doing the condom stuff, and he got them on almost immediately in this match and had them on throughout. It was silly. Like, it doesn't belong with his act anymore, I don't think.
I think he's evolved beyond that, yeah.
But, yeah, he doesn't need the pranks and the props anymore.
Well, you said that in... I know it's... They did an interview with him, which is... I can't remember if it's on Demand Progress or whether it's on YouTube, but they interviewed him, and he talked about not needing the gimp and the Pulp Fiction music anymore. He'd originally come out with like sex toys, and he wanted to stand out, but then he'd become a symbol of the gay and lesbian community, and that's what he was representing in the ring, and he didn't want that to distract from what he was and who he was. And that, I thought that was a really powerful statement for him to make.
It was a really good promo, and it would get just about anyone invested in his character. It doesn't play right with him running around a room with condoms on his hand. Like, is that representing the gay community? I don't really think so.
I think he's just having trouble letting go of that because he knows that's
part of the act
that got him over. But then you listen to the reaction that he got just walking out there. People love him.
Yeah, he, as a character, is getting over. He's still... I can understand that he needs time to tweak stuff and make sure everything is good, but I hope that the condoms get lost, because they just don't fly right with this character they're trying to push now, and it's a really interesting character, and one we've never really seen before, and then he's still doing the comedy stuff, and he doesn't need it. He's got the heart and the desire right there, and you can see it on his face, and you can see it in the way he moves around the ring, and then he's doing it with condoms on his hand, and it decreases the impact, and that's annoying, because I know that it could be better.
Well, he's going to be in strong style, so it'll be interesting to see what techniques he uses in that tournament, because that's where you have to step it up.
I liked here that Sexsmith was interacting with the non-Projo guys, and that is one criticism I have of the Projo guys and the way they're booked in Progress, is that sometimes they feel like they're in an alternate universe. And when Sebastian came out, and everyone went to the bar, I appreciate the joke. it's funny, I get it. But at the same time, it made Sebastian look like he's in his own universe and not interacting with Skirl and Seven and Andrews, and like they're on a higher plane of existence to him.
They walked off because nobody likes him. Nobody likes him at all. It was literally, even Trent Seven just walked off. So I don't want to know, mate.
It was funny, but it worries me that, Sebastian is so outside of the rest of the card, I guess. Like, he's in his own universe with the Projo guys and no one else.
Wrestling-wise, he just isn't at that level, so...
Yeah, I know, but it seems like he's in an alternate universe where everyone is a bit worse of a wrestler but has a big personality.
But the thing is, it did actually set up the whole Sexsmith pins him and they get the big pop from that. Then you had the angle with Sebastian and Pastor William Eva, and that was all, everything around that was really well done, as we discussed earlier. After that, we had number six was Zach Gibson. After him was Nathan Cruz, and then the last man in was Dave Mastiff. The storyline with the whole banter edition versus the more serious part of the origin has been going on for a while, but without them really ever suggesting that it was going to explode, it was kind of bubbling under. the Dave Mastiff spot in this where he did the, everyone does the thumbs up and then he goes to the thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
That was sensationally well done. But the timing on it was absolutely perfect. And the reaction as well from the crowd, just everything there was just perfect.
And now we have two more faces. Like we said earlier, a couple of months ago, but they had a face deficiency in progress. And now, well, we've got Mastiff and Ligero officially now feuding with Gibson and Cruz. And that should be a lot of fun, and a lot of history.
And Sexsmith has really stepped up as well. Like you could argue he's a, you know, capable of being in those bigger spots.
Yeah, definitely. I want to see him in a proper feud with a guy like Skrull. I don't know. Skrull's not doing much, and he didn't do much in this match. He got eliminated very early and very, like, just bye, see ya. Very unimportant.
He was just rolled up by even it was because he was pandering to the crowd, though. So I don't know if they're going to use that as an excuse to kind of push him harder as back into heeldom, or whether they've turned the corner on that and he's just going to be a face. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know yet.
So we were saying about a lack of baby faces before. Nature abhors a vacuum. Someone will always fall into those spots. And it seems in Brit Wrestling we have this conveyor belt of talent. Just keeps churning out talent after talent after talent. And I think people were underestimating the ability of Mark Andrews. And this was kind of his match. Once all the banter stuff had finished and Mastiff was gone and Sexsmith had his submission win over Nathan Cruz, which I thought was a great moment.
Definitely.
Once they'd moved past that, then it was all down to Gibson versus Andrews. And the only downside to this is that I felt it kind of gave away the main event somewhat. Because it felt like if a face won, then Pete was retaining. If a heel won, then
he was going to have havoc. I know what you mean. There's nothing you can ever do about that. Wrestling promoters have been struggling with that for tempus in memoriam, i.e. forever.
Nice. WWE always have the same issue when they have like a number one contenders match and then they have a title match on the same show. An example probably would be the Royal Rumble, where it's like if the Rumble winner wins. Of course, it's easier now because they've got two different brands, but it's the problem that they've had for years and years and years. So, yeah, it's not a new problem for Progress by any means, but it kind of gave away the main event. But then, having said that, they had another surprise up their sleeve, or surprises, as it were. We'll talk about that in a minute. I just want to get your thoughts on Pete Dunne and Jimmy Havoc.
Well, by this point in the show, I was pretty hyped. I knew that this was going to be a DQ at the end, so I was a bit like, eh, it's annoying. But, the previous two matches had got me pumped up and got me hyped for this match, and I at least wanted to see what happened before the DQ, and I didn't just immediately write it off. And I thought this was the best Havoc had looked since coming back. I've been critical of him. I've said that, he hasn't really gotten back to where he was before. I still don't think he looked amazing here, but he looked like he belonged at least, and that's more than I could say.
I think
a couple of months ago,
it's been a steady change in my opinion, but I'm kind of more sold on Havoc as a face now, and I don't know if that's just because I've seen more of him sort of bantering with people. When I was at the Work in a Rest Hole podcast, he was there. He wasn't actually on the podcast. He just turned up. So he was sat at the back of the room, and every now and again he'd heckle someone. He is very endearing. He has a charming personality when he wants
Definitely.
To. He just doesn't really get that across during his matches because he's always been such a hardcore wrestler. You know, he does a lot of violent things. I think he just needs to soften his character just a little bit to kind of match his own personality.
Well, a bit like how he was at the beginning. Obviously, he's now main event guy and serious and not like a comedy guy, like playing the pratfall, but...
Yeah, he shouldn't go that far, no way. But the fact
channel that a little bit, I would say.
They
be a bit more human.
King of the Goths, which made me laugh. But there is enough there. There's enough in his personality that he can do this. It's very difficult for him to step away from what he was so successful with as a heel. And I completely understand that. It's like you don't want to let go of the stuff that got you over everywhere. It's very difficult, but he kind of needs to if he wants to be a baby face.
I think he needs a reinvention. It's not a major one. Like, look at Chris Jericho, like, always reinventing himself, even though it worked before. Like, Havoc definitely has that in him to be able to look at his character and say, what I'm doing now is working, but it's not, delivering what it potentially could as a face. Like, he exhausted everything he could possibly do as a heel. Like, it was tremendous. It was an all-time run as a heel. And, like, the level of investment that people got into his character and his championship run, wanting to see him get beat. But it just doesn't translate when you're a face a year later.
Yeah, he has to change himself a little bit. But he has definitely done that a little bit, just a tiny bit. Because I feel like I got behind him more in this match than I have done at any point since he's come back. I think the best match he's had since he came back was the match with Marty Scurll. The one that went all over the building in Manchester.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Manchester, it was Sheffield. I thought that's the best match he's had since he came back. This was good, though. This was a very good match. But what people will remember, obviously, is after it had been a disqualification finish and the crowd were there chanting bullshit, it's amazing how quickly crowds can change. The reaction to Flash Morgan Webster coming out was fun, and I'm getting goosebumps just talking about this. It's the way it changed from like Flash Morgan Webster coming out, and it's like Flash is back, and everyone's like, yeah, Flash is back, and then Haskins comes out, and the I'm getting chills. The reaction was just like, yeah, and you could hear the building just. As one, just celebrate the fact that he was back in there. And then when he cut the promo afterwards saying, you asked for help, Jimmy, we're going to help you out. And we're both cleared to wrestle. The reaction that I got was incredible. And I think Haskins has been really smart here by doing this as his first comeback thing. Because he could have gone and wrestled for... Five-star for Dominant Wrestling the week before. If he wanted to, he could have done. And that would have completely fucked this up. Wouldn't have got the same reaction. Wouldn't have been the same at all. But that show didn't need him. This show needed that moment with Haskins coming out. And he's back.
Definitely a great point that like he really delivered for progress here. Not taking that booking and instead doing this one. Like, yeah, great moment. It came across on VOD as well. Like, this felt seismic almost for reaction.
Yeah.
And yeah, Webster and Haskins look badass here and sets up a tidy six-man tag for down the line. That could get a little bit crazy.
Well, I was... that could actually be the main event of the next show. I don't think they've named anything big top end yet. I was so glad I went to this show just for that moment when Haskins came out. That and the Ring Kampf and South Pacific Power Trio match, trio trip match.
So those are moments I really from a show that didn't have particularly a strong lineup, this ended up being a really good show. And the second half was very hype, and I was hyped about progress, which I hadn't been the last couple of months.
Yeah.
Its job really well.
Did I send you a text saying, like, I can't remember what it said, but, like, it was something along the lines of, I think you picked the wrong time to like, stop enjoying these shows because they're bad. I can't remember.
I mean, I can look through my text right now if you want.
Nah, it's probably not that important, but, yeah, I just texted you straight
can't
away.
Can't wait again, to like, talk oh, about that great. Show. My God.
yeah, that's the one. Yeah, it was incredible though. Just the feeling of euphoria that I had walking out of the building. It was just, it's been a while since I've had that from wrestling. Probably Brixton was the last time. So great. It was a great weekend. I really fucking enjoyed myself this weekend. The only problem was I walked away from it with. by the hangover and a cold, and I felt ill for about a week afterwards. But yeah, it was good times. I'm aware that we've kind of gone past the hour mark here, and we still haven't gotten onto ICW, so we better get onto that now. ICW Square Go. This is the first ICW show I've seen since Fear and Loathing, and we talked about Fear and Loathing, and we really weren't into it at all.
Apart from a couple of matches for Ricochet one,
yeah. But it, for a show in front of 6,000 fans, that it should have been better than that. It was a disappointment, frankly. This show, for me, polar opposite. I came in with like no expectations at all, and it felt like the booking delivered all show long. The quality of the in-ring was better consistently. I don't know, I just, like, did I come in with my expectations so low that it's just gone over that bar easily, or...?
I liked the first five matches. I thought the Square Go was not amazing, to put it that way, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, we'll go through them. The opening match, Polo Promotions against the Marauders, that being Mike Bird, Wild Boar. It was a long title reign for Polo Promotions. I can't even remember how long it was.
They had the one that was like a year and a half, like a year ago, and this one was about 6 months, I think.
Oh, I didn't even notice the title change in the middle.
Like, there were a couple of quick title changes, and they won them back every time.
Okay. Yes, but they've been the top team for a long time.
Yeah.
Put to bed here due to Mark Coffey being kayfabe injured. Bird and Boar, really good tag team. I like their working attack, and I thought they were good again here. I'm not that into Polo, to be honest. I think he's okay. But yeah, I thought the match was good. It was the right result for Bird and Boar to go over, and good opener.
Oh yeah, like, it started off very generic taggy, and then it built into something actually pretty good, and I ended up really invested in it by the end. So yeah, they turned me from like not really knowing the story and not caring about the guys to, yeah, I was into it.
The second match, I thought was terrible, but
I'm not particularly a fan of this match.
No, yet. It's a Zero-G championship number one contenders match pitting Andy Wild, who's okay, against Lewis Gervin, he's a prospect. But I think ICW have kind of seen that he's a prospect and gone, oh, let's push him immediately. And he is suffering for that so bad. I never should have put him over Ricochet at Fear and Loathing.
That looks really bad now, doesn't it? Especially on this show with Ricochet fighting for the Zero-G Championship and Lewis Gervin fighting to become number one contender.
Yeah, just put...
That definitely doesn't make any sense.
Ricochet over at Fear and Loathing. Then you don't have to write anything else. It's already written. It's just Ricochet gets the title shot. Gervin has to come back. But no, it just... I don't think he was at that level. He didn't look like he was at that level in this match. I thought the best work in the match was from Andy Wild selling the arm. It was a bit clumsy. There were some timing issues. Awkward looking bumps. Yeah, it was not a good match.
But yeah, I think Gervin could be really good one day, but not right now.
Yeah, the trouble is, like, when you have somebody that's good and young, there is a temptation to just push them straight away. I think he would have benefited from undercard matches where he comes up short, and
I also don't really know what his character is. Like, he's sort of a heel, but not really. There's nothing really to invest in there.
They keep calling him the best young wrestler. That's it. But yeah, I definitely think he should come up short when he has his Zero-G title shot. That needs to be built up more, and he needs to have more opportunities to learn from people, the way that like Pete Dunne has before rising up to the top of people's cards, the way that Travis Banks is getting, and those guys are way, way better than Lewis Gervin, but he's getting that kind of push, which is crazy. Okay, that was pretty much my biggest moan on the show, though. So with that out of the way, we can go on to something better, which was the women's title, Kaylee Ray against Casey Owens. I saw Casey Owens wrestle about a year ago, and I thought she was okay. She was very, very basic. She's improved an awful lot over the last year.
Yeah, she looked like she belonged in there with Kaylee Ray, definitely. And yeah, she had good facial expressions as well. And the ending especially, I thought, really was really effective. Her selling was really good, and it looked like she'd just been killed dead by Kaylee.
Yeah, well, I like the fact that it took her like three finishes and a sent on in between to put Casey away. It really kind of
well, that was like definitive. After Casey kicked out of the gory bomb, it was like, well, if she kicked out of one, she's definitely not going to kick out of three, so I'm just going to fucking hit her with everything I've got.
Yeah. Kaylee Ray's always been really good. We keep saying that she's probably the best women's wrestler in the UK, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. The Casey Owens, though, really good showing from her. I think this proved that there is a bit of depth to the women's division that we keep... Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Is it Rob said that he didn't felt there was a lot of depth? I think that was probably true a year ago. I think it's improving.
Yeah, that's just part of the no pun intended natural progression of the women's division.
Yeah,
there's going to be
they're getting the exposure, they're getting the matches in front of good crowds, they're getting to work with better talents, and it's been a steady improvement rather than a radical overnight one. But it's nice to see. Names that we can add in there and say that, she's improved and she's improved. Ginny's gotten better. I think Lana Austin's gotten better. Casey Owens. The divisions are improving.
Mm-hmm. It's good to see.
That was a good match. I enjoyed that. Then we had the Zero-G title. Kenny Williams against Ricochet. This was a really good match as well.
Kenny Williams pretty much kept up with Ricochet, which is difficult to do.
Yeah, I mean, compare that to Gervin at the Hydro. I thought there was a world of difference. Like, Kenny Williams is ready for this match.
Definitely. And that's because Kenny is like a proper showman and like one of the most TV ready guys in the UK. Like, he could probably walk onto the WWE Cruiserweight thing and look like he belongs along with those guys. And, you know, obviously Ricochet is like a indie superstar and is fantastic, and I will always have time for him and any match he's in, even if it is a Mr. and Mrs. tournament match.
Oh, God, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, maybe not that. But, yeah, this was really strong and probably the best match on the show, I would say. I mean, certainly not as, like, emotionally invested as Seven and Wolfgang, but in terms of, like, pure work rate.
I would give the nod to Wolfgang and Trent Seven for I thought their match was epic, and like you said, there was an emotional investment in it. With Ricochet and Kenny Williams, technically very strong. Ricochet kind of leaning towards heel to make sure that Kenny didn't get booed, which I thought was a really nice touch. He really knows what he's doing.
And I like the finish as well, sort of the bumbling into the pin thing, which protected Ricochet somewhat, and it sort of plays into Kenny's character. Like, he's not supposed to be like super technician, but he has a lot of fight in him and like a bit of pluck. He's plucky, and you definitely got that across at the end there.
Yeah, so we'll kind of go into a bit more depth on Wolfgang and Trent Seven. The way they built this match up was to basically have Trent Seven look like an idiot, which I thought was unfortunate, but it got to this match and Wolfgang's not taking him seriously at all. He's beating the shit out of him at the start of the match, breaking the wall outside the ring.
That was
with
a great visual.
And it wasn't until Trent Seven's comeback that this match really took off. But the way that he came back, it's because he got the shit kicked out of him for like, I don't know, what, 15 minutes?
And the two losses, the Wolfgang before.
And the losses before, getting beaten in the WWE UK tournament.
And they kept hammering home like 6 minutes, yeah. They really made Trent Seven an underdog here. His facial expression sold it perfectly as well. Like, he wasn't doing the whole eye poppy, oh no, I can't believe I didn't pin him there. he was doing the, like, he was exasperated, he was, like, tense, he was, like, exhausted, and just, he was almost beating himself up when he couldn't get the pin, like, can I even do this? He was doubting himself.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was a really good comeback story for him.
Top storytelling from both of them. For me, I think this is Wolfgang's best performance as a wrestler
that I've seen. We've been putting Wolfgang over all year.
All year.
2017 has been the year of Wolfgang so far. And yeah, he was really good here as like that guy who Seven just couldn't get past, the proper roadblock for Seven. And yeah, I thought Seven was the star here, but Wolfgang definitely played this part really well.
But you could tell it's a good storyline because when they cut to the crowd, you could see the reaction from the crowd. You got women crying at ringside. That's that's what it meant. So I to tell
that's
that,
what you want the crying.
Oh yeah, that's just a sign of a storyline perfectly executed. Is a good, good bit of weeping. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. This was where the show peaked for me. I was really down on Fear and Loathing, and that was mainly because the title match did not deliver. And if they'd had this match at Fear and Loathing, that could have turned the whole show around.
Yeah, could have saved the show.
Yeah, really.
But they had to have a cage, didn't they?
Oh, the cage.
And they had to have silly booking at the end. There was one silly booking bit here. The brass knuckles. What do you think of Trent Seven using a heel object to win the title?
I think it's okay if the heel brings the weapon in. I think that makes it okay.
I thought Seven brought it in.
No, it was Wolfgang brought it in, went to use it, didn't get it, and then Seven basically stole them off and punched him and went on to win. Big pile driver off the top.
I get why they were using it, because obviously he used the brass knuckles ineffectively at Fear and Loathing to knock Wolfgang out of the cage. But it just didn't sit right. A babyface using that to get his big win, it should have been just... He should have held them up, and now I'm telling ICW now how to book. I'm being awful, awful human being, I know. But I would have preferred him to throw away the knuckles and win fairly rather than...
But... That's exactly what Joe Coffey did in the main event. So now they've got a storyline where Trent Seven might have won the title, but he didn't exactly win it cleanly. But Joe Coffey beat Wolfgang without the aid of the brass knucks. There's a story there. And I think they're going
to Okay. If as long as they use it, I'm okay with it. I don't want it to be a throwaway detail that he used them. That probably will lead to something, definitely, and that is a good story beat. I'm just worried that they're going to be like, nah, you want it clean, whatever.
If they forget about it, that would be unfortunate. But square go match. Shall we take it in we'll take it in third chunks.
Well, the first two third chunks, we can slap the label of jobber onto them.
But there was some decent stuff in there, but I get what you mean. It was basically a chance for some less utilized talents to get eyes on them.
Mm. I thought the New Nation had a good bit of control.
Yeah, that was kind of in the middle.
Joe Hendry's bit was always fun.
I like the Purge. Stevie James, I thought, looked really good in there. This is the chance that some people get. It's like when you have this kind of opportunity, you need to do something to stand out.
I
thought they did really well. You put something in the notes for this show about Flex Hunter being like a Diesel knockoff.
He's Flex, the embarrassingly bad fake Diesel.
He was dressed like Diesel, but he was doing spin kicks and stuff, and he's 6'7", so I was actually kind of impressed with his work.
I couldn't take him seriously. He looked like a guy at like a WWE tribute show playing Diesel.
He definitely needs to work on the look, but the actual in-ring stuff that he did, I was actually quite impressed with. Who else was impressive? There was a little bit with the BT Gunn coming back from his knee injury.
That's not in the first two. I think BT Gunn and Chris Renfrew, when they squared off, that was the start of the proper.
But if we're going by
match.
Numbers, then they were 18 and 19, so they were coming in
the end of the second third, then
Then you kind of got the meat of the match was the last 10 entrants. a lot of big names in there. Martin Kirby, Jimmy Havoc, Joe Coffey, Drew Galloway, Grado, all coming in the last 10. It was very top heavy in terms of the big names. I really enjoyed seeing James Scott in there. I don't know how much you know about James Scott.
Nothing.
He used to go by Darkseid. He had the same thing that Brock Lesnar had. I can't pronounce it.
Okay.
You know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had that. He kind of dropped out of off the scene a little bit. The stuff that he did in this match was like an assortment of like strong style violence when he was in there, and it got a little bit overwhelmed by Jimmy Havoc coming in and hitting acid rainmakers on everyone right afterwards. But I thought he did look really good. Any other thoughts on this collection of talent that they had?
It was good seeing the New Age Click and their whole bit together. That was pretty fun. I thought a lot of these guys didn't get a lot of time in the ring, like for the first 2/3, a lot of like the useless people. Well, not, I don't want to bury them, but like the unimportant people in the match got a lot of time compared to these important guys who are like main eventers in ICW, and they were only around for like 3 or 4 minutes. Like Drew Galloway walks in, and then like Jack Jester walks in, and they're both eliminated immediately. So it's like, probably could have brought them in earlier and spread out the star power a bit and made them seem more impressive by lasting longer. I don't feel like anyone in this match lasted in the ring more than like 10-15 minutes.
I think probably Lionheart was probably in there the longest because he came in at the start and had to wait for the spot with Joe Hendry where he gets eliminated. So that, where did Joe Hendry come in? He came in at 12. So yeah, he'd have been in there for like 20 minutes or so.
Okay. But still, that's not like, you look at WWE's Royal Rumbles and they get 40-50 minute guys pretty much every time. Like, it just seems more impressive when guys can last longer. But yeah, quote me on that. More impressive when guys last longer.
Oh dear. Let's move on to
round table.
let's just move on to the booking with the final four, as it were. Well, it's final three because Jack Jester went straight out. But I thought Grado looked better here than he has done in a while. The reaction of the fans was a lot better. They had Madonna playing when he came out, and they muted it, but then had to stop right away because he ran to the ring. And the crowd finished off the start of it. I really appreciated that. I thought he had... Well, it came down to Joe Coffey and Wolfgang. And I get probably part of the reason why they had so many people come in late for the big names is they wanted to kind of tease that it could have been like any of them that won.
Yeah. I mean, it did feel like any of them could have won. Yeah. Like they did get that over. I just would have preferred star power laid throughout the show or the match rather than just Lionheart and Joe Hendry for a bit and then not.
Well, Joe Hendry came in at 12.
So between him and BT Gunn, like, there was one guy in the first 19 who mattered, basically.
So we got down to the brass tacks, as it were, and Joe Coffey got the big win over Wolfgang. Do you think he's the right person to win? He's probably the most over person they've got. Either him or Grado.
Yeah, it's the obvious choice, I guess.
He's had those.
And Trent Seven versus Joe Coffey is pretty impressive match, and you can certainly put that up on a big show, and people would come. I have no problems with Joe Coffey winning. They'd be building him up a lot. Better than going straight back to Wolfgang. Better than. Well, Drew Galloway and Jack Jester have their thing. The New Age Click have their feud going on.
The thing with the Square Go title shot is it's like the Money in the Bank briefcase. He doesn't have to cash it in straight away. So it might be 6 months down the line. It might be at Fear and Loathing. You don't know. What I would personally like to see is Trent's first defense be against Mikey Whiplash. I know he's kind of on the outs at the moment with with ICW. I don't really know what the situation is, but that's always a good match. So I think that would be an impressive way to go. And it would make Mikey a big deal, bringing him back in the main event.
And yes, yeah, I don't know if Mikey is going to come back to ICW or not.
I don't know what's really
going on there.
That would make sense, because they had the... That's basically how Trent was introduced there. It would make sense from a booking perspective. But yeah, I'm not really sure what the situation is with them, so...
I think this show, they did do a good job of making me want to come back for more. Like, with the Trent 7 title win, it felt significant. Trent versus Joe Coffey is a good match to look forward to. And, you know, there were bits and pieces sprinkled throughout the show that made me want to see what's going to happen next with the stories, with the titles. I'm still not fully invested in ICW. Like, I'm not going to become an ultra fan of ICW. But it did a much better job than Fear and Loathing of making me actually want to see a future ICW show.
This would be a really good jumping on point for someone who wanted to get into the promotion and perhaps had been put off by Fear and Loathing almost. It was like this was a much better show.
This was a much more focused show as well. Fear and Loathing was all over the place with like what was important and what they wanted to highlight and get over.
I think they got torn between needing to put over the local talents and wanting to draw a big number by putting people like Kurt Angle on the show.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right.
And there also wasn't any, you know, Red Lightning, Mark Dallas silliness. Now that that's over, get on with some more in-ring stories.
This was a good show. I really enjoyed it. And it's been a while since I could say that about ICW. So you never know, things might be looking up.
It's good. Always good to have more good wrestling around.
I just don't have time for everyone. This is ridiculous.
I know.
So next time we have to talk about like two OTT shows and what, Fight Club Pro and what else is coming up?
All the shows.
there's another Progress show in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
16 Carat. I've got the dates for it right here. March 10th, 11th, and 12th. So you were right. It's exactly a month away from... We're recording this on the 12th of February, so exactly a month away. And Kota Ibushi's in the UK the same
of course,
time.
Of course. Shall we talk about the Chris Javis stuff?
Yes, I think we need to.
We need to cover it.
So PCW are running a tournament. Which is the Chris Travis Memorial Trophy. I can't remember what it's called. But they're running this show, and people started asking questions about it because Martin Kirby was not booked. And you'd think the first person to be booked on a Chris Travis Memorial show would be his best friend.
Yeah.
And then word came out that Kirby had been asked to do the show and he turned it down because no money was going to charity, as in zero money was going to charity. And PCW's reasoning for defending this was that they felt they'd done enough already. But you can't use his name when he's died of cancer last year and then not give any money, not even a percentage, not even like 1%, nothing, zero money.
All profits or whatever. Just like, yeah, this is not only not how charity works, it's also sad, but this is like the first time we're talking about Chris Travis since his death and it's in this context. Like, it's...
Well, we talked about it.
It's kind of a mess.
Because Progress put his entrance music on as part of their warm-up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really nice touch to just say, we remember you. And
yeah, you got us.
I've seen wrestlers pay tribute to him. Will Ospreay did something in Japan where he put his name on his wrist tape.
That was Invasion Attack, I think, when he was wearing the pink tights and stuff.
I mean, there have been some genuinely loving tributes that have come from the boys, and I'm sure his family appreciates that, but I wouldn't have thought they'd appreciate a company running a show with his name on it purely for profit. And that's what this is. I'm not sure what has changed since, because that's the last I heard of it. Apart from several of the boys have said they're basically donating their fee.
Yeah.
But they shouldn't have to do that. If it's a show where it's been done with where you're using a dead guy's name and you're not going to give anything to his charity of choice, then there's something wrong there to begin with. Shouldn't have happened. It's caused all manner of arguments, and it just shouldn't have happened to begin with. Just either don't use his name, or use his name, contact his family to see if that's what they want, and ensure that a certain percentage of the gate goes to charity. It could only be 5%, and as long as some money was going to charity, it would have been fine. But because Stephen Flood has been a prick about it,
Flutter being Flutter,
it's just caused eruptions all over the place, and now the boys are the ones who are doing something to set it right, and that's just being a cunt as a promoter, as far as I'm concerned.
It does. It definitely sucks, and it's a dick move. And yeah, there's not really, you can't really justify it by saying that you've raised lots of money for Chris Travis and his I think it's the Cavendish Cancer Foundation.
Yeah, that's the name. That's the one.
Yeah. They raised a lot of money for that before, and that's great, but you can't justify prior charity to justify not doing something charitable when you're using the guy's name and making money off of it. Again, like, it doesn't give you the right to use Chris Travis and make money with him forever and ever because you've already donated some money to his charity. Yeah, it sucks all around, but at least money is going to charity from the event, just not in the right way.
It is,
I guess.
Now I know Pete Dunne is donating his fee. Ryan Smile is. I'm trying to look for the. So I want to make a point of linking to it. Is it Cavendish Centre? That does sound right to me. Cavendish Cancer Care. You can go onto justgiving.com, search for Cavendish, and it's Cavendish Cancer Care. And you can donate to them should you feel the need. If you look on there at the moment, on the right-hand side, there is a donation from Ryan Smile. So that would be the right thing to do, Stephen. On that note, I think we're done. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
British Audio Wrestling on Live Audio Wrestling. It's my other podcast, two-timing podcasting.
You know what? I'm gonna go and do another podcast as well.
More podcasts for everyone. It's enjoyable. And also, I'll be writing a RevPro cockpit show review for Voices of Wrestling.
We didn't even cover cockpits.
We didn't even cover cockpit. There's been tons and tons of wrestling, but at least I'll cover it in written form very soon.
On Voices of Wrestling, you can actually check out the review I did for the Progress show that we just talked about. I also reviewed ICW Square Go. They're both on Voices of Wrestling, which is a bit weird. If you would like to do me a favour, you can go on to rearviewreviews.com, which is my website, and it has a little Amazon link. So if you don't use the Voices of Wrestling one because you live in England and it doesn't work, then feel free to go to my website, click the little Amazon link that's there, buy things to your heart's content, and I get 2.5% of that back, which helps me to, you know, run a website without it costing money.
Devastated, but the Voices of Wrestling Bloom Vat link doesn't work in the UK.
No.
Devastated.
No. if you live in America, you can also go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon and buy stuff from there, should you feel the need. And I'm genuinely doing another podcast. I don't know what it's called yet, but yeah, there's another one at some point. And on that note, I think we're done.
I think so too.
Oh, good evening.
Good night.